WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, and NHTalkRadio.com. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for some New Hampshire government news with our friends over at the New Hampshire Bulletin. You get their articles at NewHampshireBulletin.com. They join WKXL in the morning every Friday, as well as on our podcast feed if you check out NHTalkRadio.com or WKXL on your favorite podcast provider. Today we got the big guns back again. We got senior reporter Anne Marie Timmons on the show. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me. It might have been overselling me a bit.
Not at all. All right, so let's start off with some family planning politics that have been all over the place recently that you wrote about. What's going on there?
Politics, I would say, is the right word. So the state contracts with several providers. Planned Parenthood is one, a Quality Health Center, and then some you probably haven't heard of, Amaskeag Health. And these contracts pay these folks to provide low-cost, basic reproductive health care, like cancer screenings or pap smears or birth control or STD testing. That's what this money goes for. There's three providers, the ones I named, Planned Parenthood and the other two, that do abortions. None of that money is allowed to go for abortions. They have to do that with their own money. There's some executive counselors who aren't convinced that that money is separated, even though the state has done audits now per new state law with all of them and was able to say there's no mingling here of money.
That's interesting, and I feel like that's been missed in a lot of the coverage, is the fact that the audits were run.
The audits were on those were new this year, and they weren't a small lift for the department or the centers. They got it done. It wasn't persuasive to enough counselors. There's some counselors, David Wheeler, who just doesn't know amount of information will convince him that if you're paying the light bill, you're not commingling funds. So there was those contracts did not go through. I think one other thing that was a little bit lost is this was money for services that have been rendered. So it was, you know, it's not going forward. So they're missing money they were to get, but then also it doesn't bode well for contracts that'll come up in the future. And these three providers represent 12,000 low-income men and women in the state. So it's a big group of people that are affected.
Do the executive counselors have offered any alternatives where they want to put the money to instead, whether it's other doctor's offices or something like that? Or is it just basically just off in the ether at this point?
That did not come up at the council meeting. I have not heard counselors talk about this. We'll say that during the legislative session, Representative Jess Edwards did propose in the budget, and there's an extra $50,000 to entice providers to come into the program just for perspective, the money lost this week to those three providers was almost $300,000. So it's not a comparable, really. And I don't know yet if anyone has come forward because this just happened this week.
I'd imagine those providers are up in arms trying to figure out how to get this remedied.
Yeah, they are very concerned. Further patients, longer wait times, diminished services, a sliding scale will come down so fewer people be covered. So really concerned about that. There's some question, I think, if it could come back before the council. I think it's slim, but two of the councils did not explain their reason. Two of the four did not explain why they voted these contracts down at the meeting. So I followed up with them. And their reasons were surprising. One said the contracts did not have enough detail. They were 2,000 pages long. And the other counselor said the other counselor said he did not have written documentation that the money was separated. So two things that are sort of gettable if you want to follow up, and they did not ask these questions at the executive council. When I shared that with the governor for comment, you know, could this be, you know, why didn't you hold on to these contracts if they had questions? He said, I'll bring them back if they get the answers and they want to have a revote. So far, I haven't heard that's going anywhere, but.
What's the stance of the governor specifically on this?
He is a big supporter of these contracts. He did vote down a different Planned Parenthood contract previously a few years ago when he was on the council. At the time, Planned Parenthood was being investigated for some alleged wrongdoing that was picked up by a secret recording that was later found to be not true. And that was the one year that the governor did not support the contracts. And he said,
"Oh, wow." So you're talking Project Veritas like a decade ago? Wow.
Yes. So that was the one time he did not vote for them. He said it was because of this investigation. He has spoken out for these contracts several times. I think he understands that it is reproductive care, not abortions. That message is not quite believed by some.
Now, what's going on with the federal delegation when it comes to funding? So your article touched on some of that.
Yes, they, Senator Shaheen's office had tried previously to get some alternative funding to these providers. This week, they have written a letter to the Office of Budget and Management to say, listen, the Biden administration has changed some rules around this other funding called Title X funding. That money goes to family planning clinics, is another source of funding, a big source. The Trump administration added a rule in there, which was you cannot provide abortions. You cannot refer people to abortion providers with your own money. You can't do that. So these providers in New Hampshire said, we can't take that money because it's not ethical given our, you know, loyalty, our priority of taking care of our patients. We just can't take it. And the Biden administration has okayed a reversal of that rule. It has not gotten the final sign off. The federal delegation this week said, you really need to do that immediately because a lot is at stake. And so that went out to yesterday. So we're still waiting to hear.
Yeah, and there's a, and of course, it's the worst possible time for the federal delegation to be doing much of anything aside from the budget and the infrastructure bill, and the reconciliation bill is still up in the air. So they're very busy at the moment.
They are. Yes, they are.
All right. So is this basically just up in the air up until someone caves here, essentially?
I think that federal funding will come through, that second piece of federal funding, not till March. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, no one has said this, but I think this is going to be a rallying cry of sorts to donors. I think people will come forward, support these providers, and get them through somewhat. I think that'll be short-lived. That's not going to fund them forever. So there is sort of waiting and hoping and just being optimistic that at least some of that federal money will come through this spring.
Speaking of rallying cry, let's talk of a crazy protest that overwhelmed the GOP, New Hampshire GOP delegation here. What happened with that?
That was a scene. So the leadership of the House called a press conference to protest the Biden mandate, vaccine mandate. It wasn't surprising. This group called Rebuild New Hampshire, which is just like superb at organizing themselves, turned out hundreds of people to this rally. And initially they were with the leadership. They said, yeah, we are not for this mandate. You have to get rid of it. But when the leadership didn't have something concrete that they could give them, which there isn't anything right now, the crowd turned on them loudly, fiercely. At one point, the Speaker of the House was just pleading, you know, you're yelling at the wrong people or on your side. And they just weren't buying it. At one point, the crowd just in like large groups just turned their back on the lawmakers as they were speaking. So I do feel like folks are underestimating the anger of this group and also its ability to channel that anger into action. So that's what we saw last week.
Yeah, there's one thing that could be said about the Trump MAGA movement is it definitely brought a more outspoken conservative side of things to protests, which it's like you always see like we saw the Stop Asian Hate protests. We saw after there's any large shooting, there's protests with guns. There's all sorts of mental health protests that usually are, it's a lot more people on the left side of the aisle. There's no way around it. But the MAGA movement has activated this blue collar, right wing population that just was not outspoken on politics before him.
It's possible. I do think there are groups like that that go to rallies. I was struck.
Mainly abortion based, if anything, though.
Yes, definitely. I think this vaccine, this COVID vaccine mandate has raised a lot of questions for folks, and they can't be put into one group because some of those anti-mandate people said they were not anti-vaccination, which, you know, is more of the New Hampshire way. Don't tell me what to do. So it's hard to like parse that out and see where people are. And I do think this COVID has definitely mobilized people. They've seen it works, you know, we've had a few years now of protesters getting heard. So they feel motivated, committed, energized, and they're pretty good at it. I will say they're pretty good at organizing themselves.
I mean, Stop the Steal is a prime example of how successful these movements can be with organizing, regardless of whether I don't think, honestly, they had any sort of case to make for widespread voter fraud. But it was amazing. It was interesting, put it as passively as I can, to see how swiftly they came together, because there's only like a month basically where they could really get a movement together, and there was movements, there were multiple protests down on the State House lawn about that.
I would really challenge any other group to match this success. They have, you know, Facebook, they have different online channels, they're communicating, email. I mean, they turned out 300 letters the day before a hearing on the vaccine registry and hand delivered them to DHHS.
Wow.
Like, it's hard to get 20 people to do something and show up when everyone's life's so busy. So I do think that's going to be something to watch and not underestimate.
Yeah, I'd suggest anyone that's interested more in the COVID vaccination mandate that Biden is pushing through is I did a podcast with Professor Lucy Hodder on the legal impact, which you can check out at law.unh.edu/podcast. It's also a podcast we air on WKXL in the mornings on Thursdays, so definitely check that out. But Lucy's like the most top-level health policy expert I could possibly imagine. It's a little intimidating sometimes when I'm doing podcasts with her because she's just extremely smart and knows all this stuff, but she really dive into it. And she got onto her soapbox too for about 8 minutes straight, which is a little entertaining.
Oh, I will check that out. She is top notch.
Oh, yeah. All right. So there's been a masking again is kind of eating up some of the news cycle, especially the last half of the week here. And you've been covering that a bit. What's going on?
Well, I think there's increased confusion about not only when do I wear a mask, is there mandates, there's not mandates, what kind of mask do I need? Do I need a KN95, an N95, a respirator? And there's different advice coming from different places. So I think people are genuinely confused about it. I talked to a doctor. His bottom line was, don't get too worried about all those details. Just get a mask that has more than one layer so it can filter and can fit around your nose. I will say the Journal had an interesting article in New Hampshire Journal this week talking with hospitals who are now not letting people come in with cloth masks. They're requiring these surgical masks, which are interesting because I don't feel like they fit as tightly, but they feel like they're more appropriate. But the hospitals are saying the cloth masks are still fine when you're going to the grocery store and everywhere else. So it is confusing, I think, for people. And then, of course, we've seen fights at schools over masks. There was one really interesting story I'll tell quickly. Merrimack Valley had a meeting this week between the school board and their state representatives. They streamed it to two places, the cafeteria and the gym. The gym, you wore a mask if you wanted to be in there. The cafeteria, you didn't have to wear a mask. Both people could see it. People refused to go to the cafeteria. So they wanted to remain in the gym without their mask. They kind of tried to negotiate over this for 30 minutes and then finally postponed the meeting. So I'm not sure where you go if you try to offer that kind of compromise. It will be interesting to see what's next. And this group, Rebuild New Hampshire, is organizing to have people at school board meetings on a regular basis around the state. So this is not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, this is going to be definitely continuing and going back a little bit on the hospitals moving away from cloth masks and requiring people to put on their pre-provided ones. I'd imagine a good part of that's liability. They just know it's like, hey, we know they've at least had this. It's not just a neck gaiter, which is widely known now that neck gaiters don't do a thing. they can be more comfortable for a lot of people, but literally it's a single layer and everything's coming straight through it. And but also on the other hand, now people that are fiercely anti-mask are using that as information just turn against any masking at all, saying, see, the hospital won't even let me wear it. It doesn't do anything. When and unfortunately there's no real evidence one way or the other, because there hasn't been any widespread studies, because everyone's been locked down due to a virus, and this came on so quickly. It takes years for proper studies to take place.
Exactly. And remember, at the very, very beginning, the you and I's of the world not working in healthcare were told, don't wear a mask.
Yeah.
So here we are, wear one sort of all the time, and that's been shifting. I think it is confusing. I think the recommendation to mask all the time is just, it feels to me like, better be safe than sorry. Really don't know when they can come off, so everybody wear them. I did ask the doctor one selfish question, which was, if you have glasses and you have to wear a mask, what can you do?
For those listening, we both wear glasses.
So to not be fogged up, I'll just tell you, there is nothing you can do.
There's not. There was so much crap at the beginning of the pandemic. No, you're not. You got to pinch it around your nose and put it underneath. No, that makes it a million times worse.
Yes, the fog spray, anti-fogging, doesn't work. So, I'm sorry. I can't help you with that.
Yeah, and the University of New Hampshire also is a mixed bag, because they've got more than 100 positives the last couple weeks, I think it was. So they're all masked now at the Durham campus, the law school. Which no secret, it's where my full-time job is. We're not, because our numbers, we have like 2 positives or 5 positives or something like that with no community spread. But these residential campuses, it's almost impossible to stop community spread.
Right. And just think about how quickly that can go, how hard that probably is to enforce mask mandates.
When you literally live there.
you live there. You have to take it off to eat at the dining hall, which is a crowded place. I think one thing that also does get lost is the vaccine, as DHHS has told us, is not a guarantee that you won't get it. It's not even the focus. It's that you won't get super sick. So I think there's differing levels of tolerance for spread within communities. It's interesting you mentioned 100 plus cases at UNH, because we can't see that post-secondary count of cases on the state's dashboard. And I wish we could, because I do think, I mean, what a prime spot for spread.
Right, it'd be great to see all the private colleges. So the University of New Hampshire posts it publicly. Like, if you go to their website and hit the COVID link, they literally have a dashboard where every Wednesday or Thursday, I think, it's updated and publicly posted. So you guys see the patch and such, immediately jump on that when they can. But it'd be fantastic. It'd be really interesting to see, like, NEC, Franklin Pierce, Colby Sawyer, see what their numbers are, because once again, they're residential, very isolated campuses when it comes to the neighboring communities, where if they have an infection, they got to isolate the students away, and basically they're stuck there.
And Dartmouth is now requiring, they've moved to testing more frequently. If you are vaccinated, you still get tested weekly. If you're not, you get tested twice a week. And there has been more conversation, like, what's the standard? Is it to be vaccinated or is it to be tested, given that we know about breakthrough cases, very rare, very, very rare, but still there. It's just like the doctor I spoke with, it's just a learning curve. Like, we're learning as we're going.
I feel like there's a lot more honesty now compared to the beginning of the virus, though, because it seems like people are, they know stuff is going to get leaked out there. So they're like, here's the information. And that's why the CDC was immediately jumped on shortly after Biden came into office with their back and forth. And like, no, people want to know the truth of what you know and what you don't know.
They do. And I do think keeping information, someone will fill that void with misinformation. And so I do think more information, the better, to be as clear as possible. There is a risk, you know, that someone's going to take that and manipulate it and say something else. I mean, there's so many sources of information. How do you weigh it all out? It's challenging for reporters, I think, to know where to find trustworthy information and complete. Like, the dashboard for the state is great. It doesn't have everything. Equity data, not very easy to find there. So it is hard. It's a challenge for everyone.
All right. Emery Timmons, the New Hampshire Bulletin. Check them out at newhampshirebulletin.com. You're listening to WKXL in the morning at 1450 AM and 103.9 FM.